Is Loki the best MCU show yet? Ben Lawhorn joins me for a special Loki Episode 6 commentary episode where we watch the Loki Season 1 finale, break it all down, and rank our MCU shows. All that and more coming up right now on 15 Minutes of Marvel.
There was an idea.
So if we can't protect the Earth, you can be damn well sure we'll avenge it.
We're gonna do this all day.
What are they called again?
Anulax batteries.
Harvey Larry batteries.
As far as I'm concerned, that's America's ass.
I control the truth! Mysterio is the truth!
Boom. You looking for this?
What is up? What is up? And welcome back to 15 Minutes of Marvel, the only podcast that gives you Marvel reviews, news, and rumors in pretty much 15 minutes. I'm your host, Ethan Simi. Today on the pod is a very special episode because not only is it significantly longer than 15 minutes, as you may have noticed by the runtime, but I have an exceptionally wonderful guest joining me on my podcast today, my co-host of 24 Minutes of A24, a co-host of Three Films and a Podcast, Ben Lawhorn. Welcome to the pod. How are you doing, man?
Man, what a greeting. That was amazing. I feel like I'm going out on, I just want to like stop right now. Like, that was perfect. This is great. I'm doing great. I'm really excited about this. This has been a fun kind of revisit. I forgot just how great this series was. So I'm stoked to get into it. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. Yes. So as you mentioned, we have been doing a little rewatching and we are prepared to do a Loki finale, an episode 6 commentary episode here. So we will, as per usual with my other commentary episodes, if you've listened to them, you know, we're going to talk about Loki just a little bit here, nice and brief before we hit play. We'll go 3, 2, 1 play and you can join along with us and watch the final episode of Loki season 1 in conjunction with us. You can hear our sort of non-director's commentary, just a podcast commentary about this Loki episode. And this is brought to you by Brandon Clark, a lovely patron of the podcast. Brandon Clark has been a patron of the pod for over a year now, which is insane to say out loud. And so he has chosen his commentary episode to be about the final episode of Loki. So, Ben, I want to start off before we hit play, before we talk about this. I powerhoused through 5 episodes of Loki today at work. I hope my boss isn't listening because I got no work done today. I just watched Loki and monitored my email, but I powered through it and I am ready and prepared for episode 6 with a fresh perspective on Loki. I believe you rewatched episode 5 in preparation for this. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah, I had a little bit of downtime at my job doing some rendering. And I was like, oh, you know what? I can fire this up. I wanted to be a little bit caught up. I remember loving episode 5 and I was right. It was fantastic. So, you know, I might come to you for stuff that happened in 1 through 4. It's been a minute, but I loved 5 and I'm excited to get into this one.
I think it is totally acceptable to talk about episodes 1 through 5 as we talk about 6, obviously, because it is the finale. It plays off of 1 through 5. It's very important to recognize the story work that has been done beforehand. So this will be the episode titled For All Time Always. If you haven't seen this episode, I don't know why you're listening and I don't know why you haven't seen it. There's two very important points. So go watch this. Go watch this. You can watch it with us. You can watch it on your own time. I think Loki, it felt like a pretty easy watch for me when I kind of gunned through all 5 of these to get to episode 6 here. I was very invested. It felt exceptionally enthralling. And listeners of my podcast know I am all for episode 3. Lamentis is the best episode. I tweeted about it today, actually. Is the single best episode of Loki, if not one of the best single episodes of an MCU TV show. So we'll talk about that as we go into this pod, because I feel like that's a little bit of a hot take, but we're going to fire this up. We're going to watch the introduction of Jonathan Majors as Kang. We're going to understand the time variance authority, how time flows, how it works, where Loki's headed in the future, all kinds of incredible things for this show. Ben, do you have any thoughts you want to get out before we press play, before we dive into Loki?
I am so pro Jonathan Majors, and I was so excited to see him pop up on screen when this came on. So I'm just excited to get to that scene again. I got to be honest.
Yeah, me too. I'm really excited because I remember the first time I remember specifically I was in Seattle when this episode came out and I like woke up before my family so I could go watch this episode in the lobby of the hotel on my laptop and then go to my van that was parked in a parking garage and sit in the trunk and record an immediate reaction. And I was so glad that I did because I was like, this is fucking iconic. This is incredible.
That's a true commitment there. I think the closest thing I've ever done to that was, get on the hotel Wi-Fi for the Breaking Bad finale. So it's like I was in Florida.
Let's go.
And I was like, it's happening the day before I go on a cruise. I have to know what happens. I can't be on this cruise for a week without knowing. I appreciate the commitment.
That would have eaten you alive, man. Dude, that finale is very important. Very important. Okay, cool. So this is how it's going to work. We're going to say 3, 2, 1, play. Ben and I are going to hit play at the exact same time. And hopefully, just hopefully, we are watching this show in conjunction at the same time.
Fingers
we might
crossed.
Be a second or two behind, but we will see. So, Ben, without further ado, let's dive into Loki Season 1, Episode 6 for All Time Always. Put your mouse over your play button
and be ready.
Because I'm coming right now. I'm going 3, 2, and we're starting at 000. So we're watching the Disney Plus logo come into play.
Yeah.
We're watching the recap. We're watching the intro scene. We're watching it all. We're staying through the credits. We're watching the post credit. We are here for the long haul. So don't go anywhere. Don't try to cheap out on me here. Don't be skipping around.
I'm ready.
All right, cool. 3, 2, 1, play. All right, here we go. This is very exciting. I have not seen this episode since it came out. Ben, I assume you're in the same boat?
Yeah, it's been a while. I think I just watched that once. I may have rewatched it like immediately after, but it was that day it came out. It's the last time I've seen this.
Yeah, so the air date, July 14th, 2021. I read that today and I was just like, that's fucking crazy.
Yeah, that's nuts. I did not realize that. I mean, in rewatching 5, you probably got the joy of more of them, but like, I love seeing Owen Wilson again. Like, it had been so long since I'd seen him. Like, oh man, he's so good. He's so good in this.
He is. And like, we're watching the recap now, and you can obviously see we're getting a lot of episode 5 moments here when it comes to all of them being pruned and all of them kind of going to the void and trying to beat Eliath to go find Kang. That scene specifically with classic Loki. Do you remember watching that scene and kind of the theme of like, I suppose we're all more powerful than we actually think we are?
Oh, I mean, it was amazing. Honestly, like as much as I love Owen Wilson, like seeing Richard E. Grant in there too, like playing like in the classic Loki outfit and just trying to hold him off and everything. Like it was so cool to see them working together. I loved all of that.
This is wild. I do not remember how this started. So now I'm remembering we're getting the audio clips of like all kinds of MCU movies.
Oh yeah.
And then we're getting real life like national leaders that are speaking because this is all happening in overlapping time, right?
Yeah, and all with the Cap and Peggy music as they dance at the end of Endgame. Like so cool.
Oh. Yeah.
What a scene, man.
So this
what a scene.
Yeah, this scene is pretty wild, honestly. And so I do want to go back to the Owen Wilson bit. So you mentioned Owen Wilson. Mm-hmm. When I was going through and I saw Owen Wilson, especially in episodes 1 and 2, which I felt like that was kind of his playground to really introduce his character.
Mm-hmm.
He's coming back in season 2, right? Like he is excellent in this show.
Yeah, if you have Owen Wilson, you have to bring him back. I'm very curious to see what they will do. With season 2, obviously, we saw fragments of this stuff in No Way Home. So, you know, the multiverse, obviously, this thing really kind of set it up that it is out there. There's a bunch of fragmenting timelines so they can do anything and everything. But I mean, honestly, like props to Tom Hiddleston for like just creating one of the best villains in the MCU. Dude's been around since the beginning. You know, he was in the third or fourth MCU movie ever, Thor. What do we get? Iron Man,
Thor,
Hulk,
yeah.
Iron Man
Third.
2, and then Thor. So he was here at the fourth movie, and we're still talking about him. Like, and he's still here, and he's going to be back. And I love it. I think that's fantastic. He's so good.
I know. I just couldn't get over the fact of, like, every single episode, I was like, fuck, Tom Hiddleston can act. Like, this guy is the real deal. He really wants to be Loki and he really cares. And I think it shows that the most important thing in this show for me and why I think it's one of the strongest is that it shows the core values of Loki, right? And we even look at that of like, what makes a Loki? And like with Sylvie and everything where we're at now in this finale, it undresses why his character is actually so important. And I don't know anybody else that could really do that.
No, and it's crazy to think about him. You know, he talked about casting What Ifs and that he like originally tried out for Thor. And it's just like, it's hard not to see Hemsworth, you know, in that role. But it's also now just impossible to think of Loki without Tom Hiddleston. Like, he plays it so well. He's got the emotion. He brings like some gravitas to the role. I think that's why his character has like literally survived so long, but just like lasted. It's just that he's great to have around. Like, he's one person that can really counter the whole Avengers and like all of those people. Like, that first Avengers movie, it's just him, you know, versus all of them. Like, we eventually got to Thanos and everything, but like for that first little while, it's just like, it's Loki and he holds his own, you know, obviously until we get to the puny god scene. But you know, as far as acting and everything like that, he's really holding his own against everybody and he continues to do so. And here with I forget Sylvie's name, Sophia DiMartino, like, she's also like, just came on the scene and was like, yeah, I'm gonna fucking own this role.
Yeah, fucking Miss Minutes, dude. I was prepping for that. I was like, I know she's coming. I know she's here. And then she just popped up. So I'm going to talk about the scene that's going on right now. I guess originally, so writer Eric Martin, who has been actually on this pod, so go check it out. It was last summer. I believe when episode 3 and 4 were coming out, Eric was able to come on this pod, talk about some of his writing for the show, talk about some very important scenes that I asked him about. He revealed that Loki and Sylvie were originally supposed to enter this citadel at the end of time and fight, quote, a series of the greatest warriors across the timeline. They would also be walking by a vast display room of time displaced artifacts. Mm-hmm. And then all of these ideas had to be scrapped due to time limitations caused by COVID. COVID notwithstanding, do you think that would have been better than this exchange with Miss Minutes or Miss Minutes like trying to, you know, divert them and keep them from going to Kang?
It's hard to say. Like, I think one of the things that I really love about this episode is it's like slow, almost quiet nature, because the end of 5, you know, we get so much action. There's so much going on. Yep. So I kind of like them just going in and just like, obviously we get the jump scare. I mean, this and WandaVision were really the only episodes that I stayed up until 1 a.m. to watch.
Yes. Yes.
And so whatever it was, you know, like 1:20 in the morning, all of a sudden she comes on the screen, like, holy shit. Like, it really kind of got me. But I think it just works so well. And Miss Minutes was played out to be so important throughout the whole series. And so I think this again just kind of like reiterates her role in this series. So I love what they did. I love the Citadel in here. I mean, as we, you know, see the way it looks all kind of cracked, kind of that Japanese artwork style of, you know, like if something breaks and putting it back together, and with the cracks in place, which, you know, kind of looks like maybe we're getting with the Thor Love and Thunder, by the way, which is kind of cool. So, but yeah, no, I think it's beautiful. I love, again, the slow, quiet nature of this, because we're all just about to collectively have our minds exploded, you know, in just a little bit. So it may have just been too much after all the fighting. What do you think? Would you have wanted to see that?
No, I mean, I think that it brings a very interesting conversation. And really quickly, before we kind of leave this scene, super important to recognize that both Loki and Sylvie recognize that they write their own destiny now. Mm-hmm. They were taunted with the Infinity Gauntlet. They were taunted with a lifetime of happy memories to wake up to the next day. Loki at any point in time before this would have absolutely taken that. No problem whatsoever. And he chooses not to, which I think is really, really good story writing through 6 episodes.
Yes.
The Citadel, I think you're right. I think it would have been an action overload. Part of the qualms or issues that people have with this episode is the slow nature of it. I know a lot of people are like, it was too slow. Should not have been a finale. Like, we got this massive monologue from Jonathan Majors. Like, what are we doing exiting on such a slow note? it's fucking important because we're learning things that go far beyond this series and this little microcosm of the Citadel. We're learning about core character values, and we're learning about what Sylvie values. We're about to find out, and we're about to find out where Loki's heart is at. And yeah, all of this done in such a slow, revealing nature, layer by layer. Exquisitely done.
I love like the purple hues that we're getting here. You know, it's like it is just like a straight up black area, you know, when we first get in. But now that we're, you know, approaching Kang, we're getting the purple hues, which I love. And yeah, to your point, it's right. I mean, honestly, like, we aren't that far removed from the end of the Infinity Saga. And now we got to figure out what's next. Like, what do you do? And that's why, you know, mm-hmm. people may have had a problem with like the monologuing and all that, but I loved it because a huge Jonathan Majors fan, but also just like so cool to get an idea of the possibilities. Oh, look at that. Look at that.
Let's fucking go. Oh, what a guy.
Oh, I just want that whole outfit.
Dude, me too. I need that to be like my everyday wear to my corporate job. And so the way he introduces himself and he goes, this is wild with his, with his hands. Oh,
just rocking that apple the whole time. Like, oh, I loved it. Like,
I know
we knew we were getting him in Quantumania, but I don't think we knew he was coming. Like, there's plenty of speculation, but I don't think anyone knew who He Who Remains was going to be for sure. Right. Like, we didn't know that.
I don't remember. It's possible that it was out there like on 4chan or something, and that it did maybe get leaked, but I personally did not know. I kept myself from that because I knew it was going to be something important. And so I wanted to feel the full impact. I think the apple is such a important little touch, and the fact that he keeps eating it, and this elevator scene, which is a direct kind of callback to a couple episodes ago when they were both in the elevator with Renslayer.
Oh yeah.
And she was kind of in the back and they were in the front. Now they've kind of like got this opposite poses here. Oh, that was sick, dude. Okay, so the apple I mentioned, his apple is signifying kind of, I kind of got this like Garden of Eden, you know, representation of like, he's the guy that can eat the apple and nothing matters because he controls it, right? He could be God, quote unquote, or he could be the guy that he's allowed because he controls all time for all time always, right?
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, obviously, yeah, a lot of that imagery and symbolism is there, but I also even just like more at face value, like he's not bothered at all. He's just like, I'm just going to eat an apple while you guys hold your daggers and stuff to me. Like, do your thing. Like, I'm faster than either of you could even imagine. So I'm just having a little snack here while you're at this elevator. And I love that because we really get to kind of understand his personality and what his thoughts are. And yeah, it just kind of sets the tone for really how powerful this person is.
What do you think? I know this is a very vast question here to hit you with. In terms of new character introductions, I know you're very partial to Spider-Man being introduced in Civil War, rightfully so, incredible. When you put up He Who Remains, Jonathan Majors, this introduction, and then you look at his monologue upcoming and the direct impact that he has, does he rank for you on like a top three new character introduction, or are you just kind of like, whatever?
Man, I think I could lock him in at top five. You know, like I would have to sit here and really think about it, but like, I love the Peter Quill Star-Lord intro, you know, like, I mean, that one's definitely up there. Like you mentioned, I teared up seeing Queens on screen, you know, during Civil War. So that really got me. Civil War really brought us a few, though, you know, like we get Black Panther, also Winter Soldier. Like we met Bucky before, but once he's actually like the Winter Soldier, I feel like this has got to be up there because, again, we get to kind of know his personality. And it's just like it's played so cool and so calm. He's just like, yeah, whatever, you know, like, and this whole monologue is just, it's amazing. I think sometimes, you know, the comparisons can be hard because you get so much time with TV. You know, we're getting essentially like a 6-hour movie, so you can kind of go into it a lot more. But as far as the people that we've met, especially in the Marvel TV series, I think he's got to be tops as far as a new character.
I think so too. I think he has to be up there. I love this kind of not really side storyline, but like going to Ravonna, Renslayer's past and everything with Hunter B-15. What I got to talk to Eric Martin about specifically was this scene from episode 4, I believe, where B-15 essentially goes back to the kind of the Roxxon store with Sylvie and asked to see what her prior life was so she can understand better that she's just a variant right now. And we don't see where she goes. We just hear her say, "I was happy." And Eric specifically said, like, "We did not show you anything, so you could imagine it yourself wherever she might have been happy." Oh, wow. And I love that she kind of came into her own in these back three episodes as a pretty important, like, moving force to keep this storyline moving. I think it was a really cool idea for the character.
Yeah, we're able to kind of dive into a lot of these people here, which is really fun, and then just kind of bounce back to what is just like one of the best scenes, like this whole explanation of, you know, the all the variants and just all that kind of stuff is so good.
Yeah. I mean, we're gonna say here, we're probably gonna listen to some of it, so we might go silent for just briefly. But I love these texts and the like how everything is typed out and written down before it even happens.
Yeah.
Is so cool.
Yeah, it's amazing just to kind of show them like everything you're going to say, you have said, whatever. It's so well done. And again, like the way it's funny because in this, like, you know, I just talked about how great Loki was to, you know, kind of balance out against all the Avengers. Like Jonathan Majors is doing the same thing here where he's just kind of holding his own against these two who we've come to love over the last 5 episodes together. And now he's just kind of holding court, you know, he's like kind of the king, so to speak. And we're just like enthralled by everything he's doing.
Yeah, I love that idea. Like he's holding court. I think that's really good way to put it, because we've come this far in this journey with Loki and Sylvie, and we expect them to go on this tear and kind of get what they want to get. But they are met with this impervious opposition. With somebody who already knows exactly what's going to happen. I think Jonathan Majors' ability to flip his tone and his voice level, like on a dime, like what he's doing right now, and essentially going from, "Hey, let me explain this to you," to, "You're not fucking understanding me. I am he who remains. I control the time stream," is fantastic.
Yeah. So good, so powerful. I'm very excited for you to see Last Black Man in San Francisco because it's just so interesting to see the differences in his performance. I mean, it just really shows how much of an actor he is. And I'm excited. I feel like King's around for a while now, and I'm so stoked to have him in the MCU.
Yeah, just you don't bring in Jonathan Majors just to like put him in Loki and then put him in Ant-Man and just call it a day. I think he's far too important, especially where he's at with his movie career. We're going to talk about Last Black Man in San Francisco on 24 Minutes of A24 next week, which is very exciting. I've heard he's really good in Lovecraft Country as well. I haven't seen it yet. But yeah, he's good, man. He's good. I don't know if there's much more to say about him, you know.
Those leaked set photos, he is jacked for Creed 3. He is,
dude, he's fucking ripped.
It's just amazing. Like you'll see him in Last Black Man in that character, and in this one he's kind of like a court jester king, like, you know, kind of playing just, I don't know, again, fast and loose. And then the next thing we're gonna see him just be this boxer, you know, in Creed 3. So it's just like, I love it. I love how much we're getting of him.
Something I really appreciate about this episode that I'm realizing kind of as we go here, we're getting these split sequences between He Who Remains and Loki and Sylvie and holding court and really opposing one another, right? Loki and Sylvie are on one team. You've got He Who Remains on the other, and they're butting heads trying to understand each other's motives and backstory. And then we flip to this and Mobius and Renslayer doing the exact same thing and having the exact same back and forth where someone in power is trying to essentially, you know, keep the home court and really tell the other person what is going down. I think it's a really, really smart, like, storytelling perspective to jump us between two very important conversations.
Yeah, 100%. And I just, right now, honestly, I just want to, like, talk about the set design, because one thing I think Loki did a great job of, I mean, same with WandaVision, it's like they set a location and made it feel real and lived in. You know, I think the MCU gets a lot of grief, you know, for being so green screen and just like all that kind of stuff. But, and obviously there's plenty of that in here, but these MCU shows are so good, I think, at establishing a location. That's like, you could just pull like a frame from any of these shows and you would know exactly which one it's from. You know what I mean? Like, it's just this green tint we get throughout the whole series of Loki. Just like, it works perfectly. Just kind of setting the tone. And I don't know. I love, there's so much that gets dissected here, you know, with like the infinity symbols, you know, in the wall and just like all these different things. It's just like, it's so smart that, but I think it's what happens when you have a good, you know, showrunner, a good set director, and so much great source material to pull from. You know, you have like decades of comic books that you can be like, yeah, let's do this, let's do that. Like, it's, I don't know. I love it.
Yeah, it's instantly recognizable. And I think that's one thing, as I've been going back through this season and this show, realizing that it's actually a lot higher rated than I thought it was. Like, it's way higher on my rankings than I thought it was initially. Because of that, because of like the vibe of this show, I think the music, this kind of temporal music that we get in the intro, in the outro, in between and very important scenes, it is so otherworldly and nothing really mocks that, right? Like, everything is pretty different to this, and this is different from everything else. This scene is wonderful here, talking about all of his different names and trying to explain who he really is. And like I said, like, his tone of voice.
Yeah.
A jerk.
I mean, again, yeah, I'm just saying, like, the Conqueror, like, you know, that's how we all know him in the comic books, is Kang the Conqueror. But here he's just like, I don't know, it's just one of the nicknames, one of the many nicknames that I have. And it's pretty cool to see.
Yeah.
Oh, I love this. I mean, stuff.
This is super cool.
We and first saw this kind of stuff in Guardians 2, right? Like, when they're telling the story of Ego.
Yes.
I think this kind of whatever way of telling the story with his materials.
Yeah, like using these kind of 3D projections as as like historical facts.
Yeah.
And I love this story of him, how he essentially did what the Lokis did. He did what Loki and Sylvie did. They had peace, and he and other versions of himself were friends, and then things went to shit and he realized he couldn't do that. There could only be one version of him. Mm-hmm. And that's how he got to where he was. Again, like, incredible storytelling to take everything we've just done in five episodes and realize, like, oh my God, these are not the first people to do this. This has been done over and over and over again, and he's the only guy that figured it out.
Yeah. Yeah. It was so good, so powerful, and really just kind of let us know what we're dealing with here. You know, this is like beyond cosmic almost, you know, this is just like infinite and just on so many, like, the, I don't know, it's going to be so good to see how they, with Quantumania, with Ant-Man, like, how that's going to play into it as well. It's just going to be so powerful.
Yeah. I'm curious. I want to hear your thoughts. So we're almost halfway through this episode. You talk about a slow pace. To me, like, it doesn't feel slow. It just feels peaceful.
Yeah.
Like, it just feels like we are sitting in the moment. Like, we are just with him singing Amen, right?
Just
like,
that's, say,
it's perfect.
Perfectly timed.
I think that's exactly what this was supposed to be. Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. So we know he's the big bad. We know he's the guy, and what he could potentially bring in the future, possibly bringing us a Galactus or someone like that.
Yeah.
As, you know, this kind of like stepping stone to that. I'm always a little interested because when I think of him being the big bad in Quantumania, my initial thought, and it's really a bad initial thought, but my first thought is, they just really wanted a really popular big bad to spice up this pretty dead branch of the MCU. You know what I mean? Like, like Ant-Man and the Wasp, not a great movie.
Yeah.
So let's toss Kang in there and see what happens in the third installment. Do you think it makes sense, I guess, is what I'm trying to ask. Like, does he fit the vibe of that movie?
I mean, I certainly hope so. Like, I mean, Ant-Man and the Wasp, I agree, was like not in my top, you know, as far as MCU movies go. But when you think about the impact Ant-Man had, you know, like solving Endgame, you know, at the beginning, like it makes sense on that level as far as like the multiverse and being able to kind of time travel and do all that kind of stuff. Like, if anyone's going to fix this or know how to deal with it, it would be, you know, you would presume it'd be Ant-Man and the Wasp. So I am very curious to see how it fit in there. Those are, at least the first Ant-Man, it's very funny. So I can see him fitting in even just like comedically with Paul Rudd and, you know, Michael Douglas. Like, I think that stuff is going to work really well. But I'm curious to see, but it's just like, you know, I've said since whatever 2008, like in Feige we trust, you know, it's like, whatever, man, like if he's on board with it, like he's very seldom let us all down, you know, like,
yeah,
people might have their personal gripes and whatever, but overall I trust wherever he's sending this. We know we're getting like a Fantastic Four. We've heard some version of Professor X's voice for Multiverse of Madness. So like, this is all coming together somehow, and if Kang is involved with it, I'm on board. Like I said earlier, like this was one of the two shows that I would stay up for, because I just like I wanted to see it so bad. So I'm curious, where does Loki fall for you in the MCU TV show? So we have, is it five now? Like Falcon, Winter Soldier, What If, and now Moon Knight. Is that where we're at?
Yeah, so I think we've got WandaVision, Loki, Falcon and Winter Soldier, What If, and what else did you say?
And then
we have Moon Knight. So I think that's five, right?
Yeah.
I don't think we're missing anything, and if we are, that's pretty sad because it means it must not have been that good. I don't know. Yeah, so we've got five. So it's really tough for me because I preach so often on this podcast, like, I fuck with WandaVision. I love WandaVision. I think it was so unique and it was such an era and it was such a vibe. But WandaVision has some pretty serious storytelling issues, some pretty serious kind of rounding out of the story. We get a pretty bummer CGI battle in that finale. A lot of things kind of go to the wayside, which I thought was a bummer. And so when I'm watching this, I think, okay, well, this finale, to me, this stuck the landing. This gave us a reason to continue to care. It didn't overload us with CGI. It didn't try to pull a Marvel card. It said, let's take it for what it is and really enjoy the presence we're at. So I think for me, I think Loki's number one. I'm going to say it. I think Loki's my favorite MCU Disney Plus show.
It's so good. Even just from rewatching these two episodes, like it's definitely up there. Okay. First of all, for everyone who's yelling right now about Hawkeye, I apologize that we forgot.
Fuck us.
Hawkeye.
God damn it.
I did have to look it up on Wikipedia. It's like, did we forget anything? And we did. So apologies.
Dude, but that's
you
okay.
Can stop
it
yelling
totally,
into your
It totally
AirPods.
Checks out for me because I don't care about Hawkeye generally. So it's
exactly.
Fine.
for me, it's kind of that same thing. And it's so hard because obviously there are much bigger world implications of everything that happened with COVID, but I think it really messed up with a lot of the MCU release dates and timelines and everything, because I think you could tell the WandaVision finale was just kind of like scrapped together, you know, with pieces, you know, like Tony Stark in a cave, he built this, you know, whatever. It's just like, we got to use what we have and put something together. So it's, I wish obviously for so many reasons, but that there was the original timeline of like, cool, when was this supposed to get released? Because I think there was some crossover of like, you know, Black Widow was supposed to come out before Falcon the Winter Soldier, but then, you know, we saw Julia Louis-Dreyfus in Falcon Winter Soldier first, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
So it's hard to hold that against it, but you know, it is part of the final product. So I think overall I'd have to go with Loki number one, but I genuinely loved WandaVision so much, especially just with all those first four episodes giving us all these different decades. They did such a good job. It looks like we're going back to it in Multiverse of Madness, so I'm excited to do that as well. But you know, the mix of Hiddleston and everything we've already talked about with Loki, it's hard not to have it first. What If was fun, but it's like I don't even really rank it because it was just like, you know, it was whatever, you know, like it was cool, but it, you know, it was what it was. It happened. It was there. Falcon Winter Soldier. I'm curious to see where they're going to take it. That one was probably the one that landed the weakest for me. But like, I'm excited for new Captain America. Like, I'm excited for Sam, you know, and Bucky. Hawkeye himself is whatever, but I'm just very excited to see kind of what Hailee Steinfeld's going to bring to the MCU.
Yes,
because if we're getting more of her and Florence Pugh sharing the screen, then like I'm on board. Like let's
totally
check that out.
Yeah, man. I think every show is different in its own right. I want to talk about what just happened real quick on this show. So, we just crossed the threshold. We're about halfway through this episode. So, He Who Remains has been speaking constantly for going on 7 or 8 minutes now. We've had a nice long monologue from him explaining everything. And then to take that entire monologue, which instilled in us that Sylvie is wrong, he even yells at her and says to wake up, to grow up, that she is wrong about everything because he knows how it's all going to go. And then to take that and say, I fibbed. We just crossed the threshold. I actually don't know everything that is going to happen because we just crossed into something that I don't know what the future holds is really interesting when it comes to a character perspective, because we're trying to build this character and tell us, the story is trying to tell us, this guy is the real deal. He is to be feared. He knows everything. And then you just take that and you just kind of wash it all away and say like, oh, maybe he's not the guy that we thought he was for the last 6 minutes or 7 minutes.
Yes. Yeah. And just like visually how they show that to us, just like the very slow push in, we'll hold for a bit.
Yes.
And then we're just going to pull back out. And I mean, just so well done. This is like, man, Jonathan Majors is just acting his ass off and I love it. Like he is owning this whole scene. He's riveting. He really is. Like, I know we're riveting, talking stuff, but it's just like, oh, so good.
Oh, okay. And then I think we're going into the scene here and dude, and just to see He Who Remains get so excited when Loki pulls a sword and Sylvie pulls a sword. He's like there to watch. He's just like a patron of this show that he's just gonna watch what goes down.
I mean, like you said, he doesn't know what's gonna happen. This is the first time anything's really been new for him. It's like, I don't know.
Right. And like, he's so excited about that. He's like, oh, I don't know how this is going to end. Let's find out.
Ugh,
so we grow the relationship of Sylvie and Loki. We kind of put them together. We ship them a little bit, which is cool. And then to have them have two separate reactions to what He Who Remains says, I think is a really important distinction in saying, yes, they're two Lokis. Yes, they share a lot of similarities, but at their core, they're slightly different. They are different people who believe in very different things.
Yeah, it's cool because, you know, we've seen Loki since the fourth MCU movie, who was just like a jealous brother who wanted to take over the world, or, you know, or give it to Thanos, basically, and to see how much he's grown here. And then with Sylvie, you know, we just have this season, but we're kind of like, we see the flashback with her and kind of see where she's come from. And like you said, it's just interesting to see how they both have grown or, you know, developed their feelings over time here. Very well done.
Yeah, totally agree. And he's trying to talk to her about, like, he's made an actual change. He's really changed his core thought process and his core being of, like, of believing that he is better than he has ever been. And Sylvie's just not there yet. Sylvie's just not prepared to hear that. And to mix an incredible monologue with some really good action like this, and not just action. I know we just got like a little magic going on here, but hand-to-hand action, hand-to-hand combat, I think that is what plays so well for me, mm-hmm. is that it is exceptionally tangible. It's not two witches flying in the sky. You know what I mean?
Yes, exactly. We're getting a lot of just like great choreography, face-to-face, while trying to reason with her, you know, and her just trying to get by him to do what she came to do. She came to see, like,
right.
whoever it was and to kill that person. And she's determined
to do
it.
She came to just burn it all down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some pretty cool stuff in here. I love the slow-mo. Huge fan.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. Him showing up like that. This is good. I mean, this is good stuff, dude. This is really good stuff.
I was going to say, I mean, sorry for the listeners, but I'm just like caught up right now. What's going on? Like, this is one of the most touching moments that we had seen so far between them.
Absolutely. So I guess I can wait a minute, but I'm pretty sure they kiss and then she stabs him, if I remember correctly.
I'm trying to remember how she, gets by him. I believe they kiss, but then, what does she do to get by him?
Dude, and like the core theme here of not understand, or I guess not facing your trauma, and for Loki to say, like, I have felt what you feel, and for her to start to tear up like that, to understand there is someone else in the universe that truly does understand how I feel, is so touching. And then we can take a very choreograph heavy action sequence and move directly into a very close two-hander with an emotional score that's very, very, very engrossing, very touching, mm-hmm. is really impressive work.
So,
and then good. To flip all of it on its head, right?
Yeah.
We're going to get the stab. Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. She pushes him and closes the door. Dude, what a gut punch, man. But this somber, like, cello string music is premium.
So good. And we're about to get just, like, one of the best line deliveries from Jonathan Majors here. Oh, so cool.
And he's laughing? Oh, my God.
Oh,
this is wild. And the ethereal music.
Oh, I love that right there.
Oh, the wink too.
See you soon. So good.
Dude, that is some good shit. Oh my God. That's cool.
Just how confident he is in everything he was explaining. He's like, you can kill me, but there's more.
This
isn't going to accomplish what you think it's going to accomplish.
Right. And we've been in this room for almost 15 minutes, I think, or 12 or 13 minutes. Yeah. Like, we've been in this location. We have not left. We have not moved.
Look at those fucking sandals too. Hell yeah, King.
Get it, love dude. It. He's pulling, like, the fucking Arthur Harrow right here.
Just comfort, man. All comfort.
All comfort all day. Gotta respect.
And this shit's cool too. Like, the fact that we got to see this again in No Way Home. It's like, okay, cool. We're tying all these branching realities together. Like, I love seeing it in Spider-Man that they kept kind of true to what essentially just looks like veins, you know, and it's so rad. And we're seeing all these realities branch off. Like, oh, I love it. The visuals are great.
Yeah, I was just going to say the visuals here are really great. It feels very real and very lived in. And then obviously we see here everything's past the red line, kind of the threshold.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what it is.
And I do love this, right? Like, not to have to compare it to another Disney property, but it's like we're in this advanced civilization, like, scientific world. And it's just like Star Wars was like, yeah, but we really have, like, really simple kind of just screens and stuff. They look like, you know, the old DOS screens or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, like you're playing Pong. But it's also just like the most futuristic technology you could think of. I really love how they embraced that, you know, that whenever the TVA was made, it's like, yeah, this is what we were using at the time. We're just going to keep using it, but it's advanced on the inside, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I love that set design choice. This moment in particular right here has just got me fucking choking up. God. Okay. Tom Hiddleston can act. I mean, we know that. We've said that. It's absurd. But to take this moment and to understand the true impact and the true connection that he had grown to Sylvie, right? Mm-hmm. She's not just another variant of him. She is someone that he deeply cares about and wants to touch and wants to understand and change her life, right? Yeah. And to see how heartbroken he is about that, and instead of choosing to continue to be heartbroken, he tries to do something about it. I love the spin around here. I love that camera movement.
It's so good. Such a good like camera trick for like making someone feel disoriented and kind of lost. And that's exactly what he's feeling now. We're about to get such a cool reveal, which is just like some of this stuff. I don't know. It's great.
And I mentioned that kind of temporal music. You kind of get that at the very end of that score right there. Mm-hmm. Like kind of that weird electric type music. Yeah. Okay. This is a fucking crazy. Oh my God. Okay. Now I remember. I remember, yeah, Ben, when Mobius says, "I don't know you. Who are you?"
Yes.
No. I totally forgot.
So good.
Dude. Holy shit. I'm losing it right now. It's like literally I'm watching it for the first time. This is incredible.
Oh, it's so good.
Oh my God. Dude, and just like two consecutive moments where our hearts just drop, absolutely drop for this character.
We get that.
And then this reveal right here, right?
Yeah. Who are you? And then we get the Kang statue.
It's shit. It's good stuff.
It happened.
Oh, it went down.
Oh, I love it. My God.
Dude. That's how it fucking ends. Kate Heron, my God.
Kate Heron, you're a legend.
A legend, Kate Heron.
Love it.
Yeah. Inscribe her name in fucking diamonds in the MCU.
Is she coming
hallways.
Back for the sequel, do you know, for season two?
Dude, that's a good question. I am unsure. I would assume, hopefully,
hope so.
That they would kind of keep the same team and know what they're doing here.
Yeah.
Okay, we're gonna sit through the credits. We're going to stay here until we've got the very end and we're here at the final, and then we'll kind of do our full thoughts. I was just taken with that episode. I was so sucked in.
So good. So good. It's just a great, like, I hear people's complain about it being whatever slow. They wanted a big explosive finale and stuff, but this for me just worked perfectly. Like,
Yeah,
let's hear what's going on. Let's set it up for the future. We're setting the tone here. Kang is getting big ass statues, man.
and it's one of those things where it leaves you wanting more. I think that's a very important thing that the MCU as a whole doesn't necessarily do entirely well in every single project, right? They try to tackle everything that they think you want or that you might need. This show says, look, we know you're really invested in this world, and we've brought you to a very important point past the threshold, and nobody knows what's going down, and we know you want more, and we'll give it to you someday, but we're not going to give it to you right now, right?
Yeah, and just all the little hints that we get in these like credit sequences, and Tara Strong, shout out Miss Minutes, look at that.
Yep. Special guest star Jonathan Majors. You love to see it.
So good.
Oh man. Really cool. I would love so if you could keep one thing from the set of Loki, if you could keep one like memorabilia piece, what would you try to snag?
Man, that's such a good question. Probably Richard E. Grant's horns.
And I love this post-credit scene. The stamp? That's cool.
Love it. Just establish it right away.
That's
which is
cool.
And like we knew from the beginning. So
yeah, that's exciting.
Get some more.
All right, we're gonna end it. We're gonna pause and hit stop here because I don't believe there's another credit scene. It'll just be in the foreign language. All right. Did you decide on what you're gonna keep or not?
Yeah, give me the Richard E. Grant horns. That's what I want to take that stuff. What about you?
You want the horns? Yeah, dude. Oh god, that's a really good one. I like the horns. That's really smart. I think I would probably want I know it's lame because you can kind of buy them, but I think like a jacket, like a variant jacket Loki wears would be pretty slick. And if that's too lame, I would go with a pruning like bat, you know, that they have. That's kind of like a stick. I think that would be pretty cool as well. 100%. Okay. That just happened. We just watched that. We did our commentary episode. I want to know, Ben, you mentioned Loki ranks pretty high for you. Do you have any closing thoughts on this episode, on Loki season one, what you want to see out of Loki season two? What do you want to close with here, man?
Man, it's like I can't even comprehend what they're going to do in season two because I have no idea where the rest of these movies are going. Like, we're going to get Ms. Marvel, you know, coming up soon, right? And She-Hulk. And then I'm assuming Loki's going to be like after Quantumania, I guess. Like, I really don't even know, like, what are we going to go see? So I'm open for everything as long as, like, at least bring me the writers back. Obviously, I hope Kate Herron comes back to direct because I think she did a great job. But this was a really solid season. I loved it. I think they did so many good things with this that really kind of also helped influence where the MCU is going. As I said, I think at least 200 times, I love Jonathan Majors. And I was just like, so excited to see him in this and whatever else he's got coming up for the MCU.
Yeah, I think all good things for this episode. I think it is the best season finale of an MCU show. I have a pod upcoming in the next little bit where I'll be taking a look at all of the kind of season or show finales and doing a little rank, a little list. I think this is up there. I think it's done exceptionally well. I love the slowdown. I think it's really important. We've got 6 episodes here. I'm curious if we'll do 6 episodes in the second season, like you said. When are we going to get it? We don't know. Obviously, we're going to have to explore this new world with He Who Remains kind of ruling everything. I think there's a lot of places to go, a lot of things to do and see. And I just love that Tom Hiddleston loves this character. I love that he wants to be Loki and he wants to continue to tell this story. I think is very, very important. So I want to know, what did you think of Loki episode 6? What did you think of Loki as a whole? What do you want out of season 2? Where does it rank for you in MCTV shows? Get at me on Twitter at 15 Minute Marvel. Ben, thank you for coming on the pod, man. You were the first guest to come on here and do a commentary episode. I can't wait to have you back. Where can people find more of you? Plug your stuff.
You can find me at anywhere online at Benny Burrito. I do have 2 other podcasts, one with Ethan, as we talked about, 24 minutes of A24. And then another one that I do with a couple of friends called 3 Films and a Podcast, where we kind of pick a theme and pick 3 movies that we have not seen involved with that theme. So check us out at 3 Films Pod. Ethan, thanks for having me on. I think as a patron as well, I get to pick a movie. So I'm going to plan to be back here for Guardians. I got to talk about that movie with you. So look forward to that.
Fuck yeah, dude. I'm so excited. Yes, you do. As a patron, you do get to choose that. I can't wait. So there you go. Breaking news. We're going to do Guardians probably sooner rather than later. And Ben will be back for it. It's going to be a really, really good time. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on any major podcast platform. Huge shout out to the patrons, as always, Brandon Clark, who chose the topic of this episode. Truly a very, very fun time. We've got Hajir Shakib, Reagan Knopf, Alan Cole Peacock, Ben, yourself, you're on the list, Karele, Christina, Mike Zego, TJ Zorich, and Jessica. Thank you all so much for your support of the pod. I will see you back here next time. I am Ethan Simi, and remember, always go higher, further, and faster.